LegalizeFreedom.com. Why are we here? Where do we come from? Where are we going? From the nature of reality to the future of humanity. Listen without limits. Unchain your brain. Change your thinking. Change your life. LegalizeFreedom.com.
Greetings and welcome once again to LegalizeFreedom.com. I'm your host Greg Moffat, and my guest today is Bernard Beitman, who joins us to discuss his book, Life-Changing Synchronicities, A Doctor's Journey of Coincidence and Serendipity. In Life-Changing Synchronicities, pioneering psychiatrist Bernard Beitman explores the experience and ramifications of meaningful coincidences, including how synchronistic happenings came to define his own life. Building on Carl Jung's groundbreaking work on this phenomenon, Beitman applies new insights on coincidence, synchronicity, serendipity, and related phenomena to the contemporary age, ultimately helping readers begin to better identify patterns of synchronicity in their own lives, find deeper meaning, and more consciously align with their personal path and goals. Synchronicity holds vast potential, not only for individual personal growth, but for the future of the human race and the Earth itself. Hello and welcome, Bernard, and thank you so much for joining us once again on LegalizeFreedom.com.
I'm glad to be here, Greg.
Bernard, today we're talking about your latest book that's entitled Life-Changing Synchronicities, A Doctor's Journey of Coincidence and Serendipity. Before we dive into that, for listeners who don't know, just give them a little information about your background and your work in general.
I'm a psychiatrist. That means I went to medical school and did a psychiatric residency. And I was chairman of a psychiatry department at the University of Missouri, Columbia, and did research in panic disorder and chest pain, the relationship between the two. Toward the end of my time as chair, I became able to do research with synchronicity and develop the first valid and reliable scale to measure synchronicity, meaningful coincidences. Because I just wanted to ask the simple question of, do people experience these things that I experienced myself and other people have told me about? So we did it. We answered that question, yes, indeed. And we were able to determine that probably one of the most common meaningful coincidences is thinking of someone who's not in the same area you are and maybe haven't seen for a while, and they contact you. That seems to be the most common one. At least that's what people bring up, and that's what was among the top three of what we saw. So that got me into writing three books now on synchronicity. Meaningful Coincidences is the name of the second one, and how and why synchronicity and serendipity happen. And this one is about my own experiences with synchronicity. The Meaningful Coincidence book was to initiate a new field of study. I categorized meaningful coincidences in several different ways, so that's the what you do when you begin having a new field of science. You categorize. This is more human-based. It's my experience, my experiences with meaningful coincidences from starting from when I was quite young to now, and they keep happening. And then I use this, it's not just about me and my experiences. Each one of the stories has a doctor's notes, that is my comments on the story itself, as well as the principle that the story illustrates. So it's intended for you, the listener, to read and be able to identify yourself with some of these stories and gain some knowledge of the common principles behind meaningful coincidences.
Okay, so you mentioned your previous books, But the one that we spoke about was, as you say, meaningful coincidences. That was in 2022. I believe our interview was 2023. In any event, listeners will find that at legalizefreedom.com. There'll be a link to that on the interview page. For this, I suggest that listeners don't need to hear that before they hear this, but I think it's good to fill in more of the background about the nature of coincidence and synchronicity. Now, this is a term that that Carl Jung developed, synchronicity, and I still think that his example with his patient with the scarab beetle is kind of a classic example to illustrate to people, about one of the manifestations of this phenomenon. But perhaps we should just briefly say for listeners who are listening to this and they haven't heard our previous talk, a lot of people, synchronicity is no longer the mysterious term that it once was and just the name of an album by the Police. It's become more in common parlance. Lots more being written about it and talked about it, as I'm sure you yourself know. It's found its way into, popular culture, in movies, for example. But for a lot of people, when they're explained, this is a synchronicity, an example of one, they say that's just a coincidence. So perhaps we should say a word about these terms, coincidence and synchronicity, to just to ground listeners, to help them as they go forward with our discussion.
Certainly. I use the word coincidence because it is less weighted with different meanings than synchronicity. Jung used the term meaningful coincidence quite often in his groundbreaking book called Synchronicity, an A-Causal Connecting Principle. And what Jung meant by synchronicity in that book was an explanation for meaningful coincidences. And he, a little bit, and people afterwards have mixed up the causal explanation or the acausal explanation with the term meaningful coincidence. So being clear about what Jung meant originally, acausal connecting principles, where we start. So we even start before that with coincidence. And the words that we use as adjectives before coincidence has a lot to do with what coincidence means. As you mentioned, Greg, people say, oh, that's just a coincidence, or only a coincidence, or a mere coincidence. All of those adjectives say, well, it's nothing more than just something that happens, which implies randomness, but not necessarily stays randomness as the cause, but say it's just one of those things that happen, not worth paying attention to. When you put meaningful in front of coincidence, that changes the kind of sense we have of what the term means. Meaningful, meaning that it has something to do with being meaningful to me and or meaningful about the way the world works. So let's look at the word meaning and meaningful, because that's crucial in all of this. There are four elements of meaningfulness in a coincidence or a meaningful coincidence. One of them is that the two parts of the coincidence, I think of someone, for example, and they call me, are running in parallel. There's a parallelism, which is also a term Jung used, that between the two events, but there's no way of explaining it in conventional terms. What Jung meant by acausal, which was not that it wasn't something that could be explained, but something that needs further explanation, that beyond what modern science at his time was able to do. So, meaningful coincidence has to do with shared meaning between two events. Well, that's an important part of it. Meaningful also relates to the timing between the two events. The closer the events are in time, the more meaningful it tends to be. But the two primary meanings for us in this discussion is what does this mean for me? What does this coincidence mean for me? So usually that means some form of guidance, a suggestion. And remember, coincidences are suggestions, not commands. Some people take them as commands, but they're not. They are suggestions to you because each of us has the ability to choose whether to go left or right. And the coincidences sometimes are able to tell us or give us a suggestion. Sometimes coincidences just say we're on the right path. And people use numbers for that quite commonly. And a lot of people like the numbers 11:11, which appear twice on a 12-hour clock, and that's the only one that has four numbers in it. If you go to the 24-hour clock, then you get 22:22, so you get another pair of potential meaningful coincidences that people sometimes use to say I'm on the right path. So what does it mean to me? Decisions, confirmation, and other things. Suggestions. Finally, the final meaning of meaningful coincidences has to do with what does it tell me about the nature of reality? What does it tell me about what's going on in this world? When I was in school, I went to good schools in the United States, Yale Medical School, Stanford for my residency, and I had this common repeated feeling that they weren't telling me something. There was something missing in their descriptions of reality. And then I turned to my experiences of meaningful coincidences and said, well, there's maybe something here. Maybe these are clues to how reality works. And that's what I've been working on ever since.
Yes, you've hit upon something very important there, which I was actually going to come on to next in any event. The sub idea of meaning, when we're told these days, aren't we? Well, since the scientific revolution, really, that and the Enlightenment, that there is no meaning in the universe, no meaning in life. But of course, meaning is something that we ascribe, and we're also told that subjectivity is not to be trusted, if you see what I mean, or it doesn't matter. Ask some top scientists about subjectivity, and they'll deny that it has any role in their work. And where, of course, we know that's not the case. You cannot get rid of that subjectivity, and that's the key to many of these experiences lies in exactly what you've described. What does this mean for me? How does this make me feel? What does this tell me about my situation? How does it link with other events in my life? The experiences I have, I've often called, whether they're synchronistic or not, there are certain events that I call reminders, and this can be like a slap on the wrist or a pat on the back or something in between, and it refers to something you mentioned a moment ago about being on the right path. So I get what I call reminders that this is something that you should not be doing, this is something you said you were not going to do, or this is you're on the right path. This is good, and here's your little reward, your little reminder that this is good. The other role that the experiences that I have remind me of is to do with the nature of reality. And it brings in a couple of principles that run throughout a lot of the interviews that I do, talking about various different things, but ultimately about the nature of reality. And that is that these experiences often remind me that consciousness is fundamental. That's what appears to be currently, kind of the cutting edge thinking about the ground of reality. Consciousness, not matter, is fundamental. And certainly time and space are not fundamental. They're not some kind of scaffolding on which reality hangs. They themselves are phenomena, the things that the mind develops in order to navigate the space that you and I are in. For example, now, we need these concepts of time and space. You and I, for example, we're not separated by time currently because although we're in different time zones, we're speaking to each other in real time, whatever that is. But we are separated by space. But those are not fundamental qualities of reality, as far as I see it. So I mention these two principles because they play an important role, really, in what we're going to be getting into. So if you allow that consciousness is fundamental and not time and space, then the things that we're talking about in terms of synchronicity and these sorts of experiences, that's a background upon which they can unfold. You see what I mean? Because a lot of things about synchronistic experience, they seem to be people to say, well, that can't be because, and they'll quote materialistic axioms, if you see what I mean, about reality, including issues of time and space that would make these experiences impossible.
What you just said are fairly conventional ideas these days, and I'm glad to say that. That time and space, materialism, are not the fundamentals that we think they are. I'd add polarity is a very key part of this life on Earth. So that there are very these are I'm glad that you are saying these things because many of us accept it. There are many people who don't. So that you're talking about people in who are still materialistic science who don't believe that the subjective is worth paying attention to. I'm a psychiatrist. I pay attention to the subjective. That's what I deal with. But the fundamental lesson about reality, the fundamental lesson about reality that I take away from meaningful coincidences is that my mind, what goes on in my mind, is connected to what goes on in my environment. Now, that is a remarkable thing for modern science to have to absorb, that our minds are embedded in our environment. I'll give you a recent example of that. My good friend Julie was visiting me from Denmark, and we went into the forest, not too far from my house, where I have a couple of trees who are my very good friends. There are three of them. And I go up and visit those trees up partway up the mountain about every other week to dance with them, to communicate with them. It's hard for people to believe, but less so these days, that trees can communicate with human beings and want to be able to communicate with human beings. The trees have given me good advice, which I have followed. They told me to put two people together who would be very happy to know each other, and it was a very fruitful relationship between these two women that the trees encouraged me to do. And there's more. But what happened when Julie and I were up there in the mountains, and I don't get to go up there with too many people who are tuned in to the trees and tuned into nature the way Julie is. She loves birds. She loves squirrels. She could spot more birds than I ever could see up there. And she saw more squirrels than she ever saw in Denmark, in these forests near here. So she was quite delighted when we went up there. One of the things that I usually do when I'm up there with the trees is I usually sing to them. Now, we were up a little higher than the three friends of mine. Not much, but we were near them. And they had the three trees, which I call the king and the queen and the child or Horus, however you want to call a third one. They introduced me to the trees that I was up there with Julie sitting with. So I said, Julie, I think I'll sing some songs, because I usually do. So I sang three romantic songs. I like singing romantic songs. And then I said, Julie, would you sing some songs? So she sang two songs. And as we finished and got up, just as we stood up, there was no wind. Just as we stood up, as if our performance had just been finished, a flood, a rain, a hail of acorns descended around us. Didn't hit us. It didn't just do it for a little while. It must have been at least 30 seconds, maybe even a minute, and it came in waves, these acorn rain hail-like feelings. So what did it mean? For us, we both thought this was the trees applauding us, applauding our singing, loving how we sing, because Julie once told me that the reason trees like us to sing to them is because they don't have that capacity, and we do. So they have capacities that we don't do, so we can exchange abilities by interacting with each other. Then later she said that it meant how we were tuned into the trees and they were tuned into us, and that the trees have some agency. they can make decisions themselves, which of course they do, and that's more research is showing, but maybe not quite in this form. So our minds, our hearts were connected with the energies of what was around us, the trees. We loved the trees, we sang to them, and they responded. So we were part of that forest, as I often am when I'm there, and that rain of acorns just made that connection even louder.
Common, isn't it, for people to talk about talking to plants? I mean, that's something that even when I was a child that I encountered occasionally with people was like, they'd have their favorite pot plant in the window or whatever in the kitchen, and that they'd talk to it, and they'd said it would do better, if it if kind words were spoken to the plant. So that's not unusual. I also am A book has brought to mind, and I can't remember the name of it, but it's by one of the biologists, Rupert Sheldrake, who's done work which is very relevant here. One of his sons, I think it might be Merlin Sheldrake, but anyway, if you look it up, it's something to do with fungi anyway, the life
Oh, it's
of.
a great book. It's a great book about fungi.
You know the
It's
one I
called the
mean.
Entangled Life, and I recommend that to everyone. And the funny thing about it is that in that book, Merlin wonders about how these huge masses of fungi communicate with each other, and he tries to find ways they communicate with somehow a neuronal-like system among them, but it doesn't quite work out right. But never in that book did I see him mention what his father had been working on, the morphic resonance and morphic fields, because morphic fields could be a way to explain how parts of a big fungus, yards apart, can communicate with each other.
Yeah, well, this is speaks to one of the other principles. Actually, before I move to that, I want to just recommend an interview I did many years ago. But I think that it's in a field of plant consciousness that's continued to develop since then, just like the field of synchronicity. So, there's an author called Stephen Booner, who I had on to speak about his book, Plant Consciousness and the Imaginal Realm. If you think plants are just like, lumps of vegetation, inert, just sat there, then this will really open your eyes. And the principle that this speaks to, I think, that what I was going to mention is that, yes, everything, there is a great interconnectedness, and ultimately a base, a unity in creation and reality, both inner and outer. You spoke about the role of our minds in our outer environment. And if there's one thing that I've been stressing again in interviews on many different subjects, ostensibly, is that, and we're working on, we don't have a mechanism for this yet, and we don't actually really need one. It's just for those of us who are curious, we would like to know the mechanism. What goes on in our minds and our psyche has a role to play in what we experience in the outer world, and ultimately that we can affect that experience, maybe only marginally, but it can make a key difference. So that's something that we could talk about in the context of synchronicity, because if we get into the idea for people who are skeptical about this, I hope that as you work through this material and other related interviews, that you begin to entertain the idea that you do have a role in your experienced reality, whether you like it or not. And actually, you're doing this all the time anyway. So, better to get on terms with it and begin to engage with it consciously, I would say, than just to allow life to happen to you, thinking that you've got no role. Because, of course, again, that's a popular paradigm, isn't it, in society, in science and in culture, is like, you have no agency really in the world. We have much, much more than we think. For the scientists, that can be the frustrating experience of affecting their experiment with what they bring to it that day. If they come into the lab in a foul mood, they've had an argument with their partner at home, that may well affect the outcome of their experiment, things like that. But for everyday folks, it's just to entertain the idea that what goes on in your mind plays out, at least in part, in reality. And what I hinted at there, what I mentioned there, I think a lot of people, even who are skeptical or materialists, might begin to think, well, do you know what? There's this experience or expression we have, getting out of bed the wrong side, and how everything in the day can be sort of a cascade of little disasters. And then you have days when you're in flow. And even hardcore materialists can admit this. Yeah, it started out really well. I had a great breakfast and went to work and had, great news on the deal and blah, 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 and how these things work. So perhaps you could speak to that in the context, of your work.
I'm trying to understand how you think about your audience, Greg. And I have the feeling that your view of your audience is fairly materialistic and fairly like random ways of thinking about things. Not in the way that you were just so aptly describing just now and earlier.
Well, what I would say is that from the audience feedback that I get, there's a lot of people who are very engaged with the subjects and very knowledgeable, and they just find it, even if they don't learn anything new, maybe from an interview like this, they find it interesting and entertaining to hear different perspectives on familiar ideas. But I also encounter people all the time, because even whether through negative comments or through curious comments, who are new to these things and who, those are the people that are sort of that I'm trying to reach to get interested
I
in,
see. I
looking
see.
at. So it is quite a broad base, actually, because I cover a lot of different subjects, and the feedback I get is everything from people who are actually quite hostile, who would say, "Oh, this guy Bernard, he's a crank," even though you're obviously, a qualified doctor, that's not the point. Right through to people who say, "Oh, I'm totally on board with this. Yeah, I have been all my life. It's great to hear somebody else's perspective."
Oh, thank you for that, Greg, and thank you for your background information. The reason I'm looking towards the people who are more tuned in to what you're talking about, that mind and environment are more connected, that we have more agency than we think, is because in case some of your listeners haven't noticed that humanity is on a suicidal trajectory right now. We are destroying our habitat, and that doesn't make for the likelihood that humanity will survive in the ways that many of us would like to. So I'm looking at what you're saying, that our minds do influence what's around us, as crucial in trying to help humanity do something different from what we are doing. And it includes the idea of subjective objective being connected. That's why I asked.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that I understand. And you're absolutely right. There's something I think we'll maybe close out on that point about how this can help us. And it's not just about personal experience and, interesting happenings and, quirky things going on in the flow of life, that there is something at root here which, is really important. And it may well make the difference between survival for the species or otherwise.
Yes, I think so. I
Yeah, and
think so.
a lot of people who are working in related areas, everything from, quantum mechanics through to parapsychology, are saying similar things. This can help us.
Yeah,
I think it
it
can.
can.
I think these are latent abilities. I think they're atrophied. I think they're
I agreed.
something that was more developed in the past,
I
and
agree.
something that we've lost touch with. There we go.
Yeah,
So,
yeah.
in terms of day-to-day experience, a couple of things about synchronicity, and
Before
coincidence.
you get
Oh,
to that,
go ahead.
I'd really like to go back to your response to my telling you about the acorn hail. You started talking about, well, people have been talking to plants for a long time, but I'd really ask you to address not just talking to plants, but plants responding to human beings. I try to mention that I do telepathy with trees, and they tell me things as I try to suggest about two people who I needed to put together by a certain date that would turn out to be good for both of them. Where the dialogue is not one way. And it does help when you're talking to your plants at home. It does help. But that these trees are responding to me, Greg, is more what I'm trying to ask you to consider, because this acorn shower, right after we sang to them, was a response from the trees. There's no other way for me to look at that, because it wasn't any big winds happening, and it was right there, right after we stopped singing. So this is the kind of experience that I'm trying to bring to our audience here, to say that these strange things suggest a far stronger communication with the living beings around us than we are able to usually consider we think of ourselves as unique and special and separate from nature. Some people do. A lot of people, more and more people, are recognizing that we are part of nature. And this story I told you, I wish, I hope, I ask that you comment on that to tell me how you think about this acorn shower after singing.
That concludes part one of our interview. Part two will be available soon in the subscribers area at legalizefreedom.com.
Legalizefreedom.com.